tonight on The Goblin's Corner.
Custom magic items, part 2.
The Goblin's Corner Armory.
That's how we roll.
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 That's how we roll. That's how
Welcome
we
to
roll.
The Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight,
custom magic items, man.
Part 2.
Yes.
Yeah. We've had some listener feedback last couple of episodes, and you guys liked the how to make magic items episode.
So we thought we'd
make some magic items.
Just put some out in the universe and see if people like them. We like them, and that's what's important.
Now, honestly, a couple of these are what I consider to be our own campaign-specific creations, and some we've just made up on the fly.
Yeah.
And you get to discern which ones are which. But before we get to that, we've got
the question of the week.
That's right. So what happens to be this question of the week?
Well, we're doing custom magic items, so let me ask you a question. You're in a fantasy universe, and you're a wizard, because you're you, and I've met you.
What? I would play a wizard. Straight. That's my first go-to for a fantasy. If you tossed me into the Forgotten Realms, I would totally be a wizard.
Yeah.
And then a scion.
Sure.
And then I would destroy everything.
But what does your wizard staff look like, man?
My wizard staff?
Yeah, what's it look like?
Okay, let's see. It would be black,
mm-hmm.
shiny, much like it was carved directly from obsidian.
Okay.
Somewhat scaly features in a spiral, and along the top there's a curve with some spikes that might happen to glow blue, and we'll get to that because there'll be a head, draconic in its look, and it spits forth an atomic breath weapon. And if you're thinking, damn, that sounds a lot like Godzilla, it is.
Yes.
That's what it would look like.
Sure.
And it would probably have some mystical symbols and shit on it. I don't know. It'd be more than that, but that's definitely what it would look like.
It's mystical, like, symbols carved into the teeth.
Yeah. It's basically the head of Godzilla.
Have you ever considered writing a warlock patron?
For the patron of Godzilla? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, he's basically a great old one.
Or a Tarrasque.
Well, I mean, let's face it, Godzilla.
Except he's better than the Tarrasque.
Yeah, Godzilla can take it.
He can take him.
He can take him.
He can take anybody. He is my Dark Lord and Master, and if I were a warlock, I would totally be the patron of the Godzilla old one.
Yeah.
Oh, the Kaiju, the patron of the Kaiju?
Sure. That way it's legally distinct.
Yeah, so we can't get sued for it.
Right.
Yeah, that's totally what we're going to do. We might write that up soon. Probably someone's already written that up. There's no telling.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out.
We will definitely look at it. Have you written a patron of the Kaiju? Write to us. info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, eric@goblinscorner.com, or
me, matt@goblinscorner.com.
All right. Now, Matt, we never got to you. I want to know what your wizard staff looks like, because you would either be playing a wizard or a cleric.
It's true. Or potentially a druid, even.
Potentially a fey warlock.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really your go-to.
I would be so multi-classed that I would be useless but extremely happy.
Be like Order of the Stick out here, just nothing but multi-class.
Yep. Have you seen the webcomic Goblins, Life Through Their Eyes?
No.
That's something you should check out. Anyway, there's a character, there's a goblin on there that is Senior Vorpal Kickasso.
Okay.
And he is literally 1/12 of everything, of every class.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he's just useless until he's no longer useless.
Until he's got a skill that he can exhibit.
Right. But anyway, my staff. Here we go. We're going to go Purple Heartwood.
Okay.
As the base core of the staff.
Is it now, are we talking heartwood as in like a lavender purple, or is this like a deep?
No, the deep.
I dyed my hair purple.
Yes.
Okay. So electric purple.
Yes. Like an old purple heartwood.
Nice.
Okay, that's going to be the core, and then it's going to have copper vines running up it, and the leaf inlay is going to be malachite.
Very regal. Regal in my mind definitely gets their attention, because they're going to know there's a bright purple staff with some malachite and some gold, or is it, you say gold or bronze?
Copper.
Copper. some copper. It was some kind of metal.
Sure.
I wasn't paying attention. Yeah. It's fine. This is, by the way,
it's fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah. This is generally how our conversations go, not just on the podcast, but in real life.
It's true.
Matt will say something. I will make some kind of smart ass comment. I will only half listen at what he's saying. He will then interpretate what I'm saying and turn it into actual English instead of the word salad that I normally exhibit.
That's fairly accurate.
And we're both usually sleep deprived when we talk, much like this podcast.
In fact.
All right. We're getting off topic. Let's get to the matter at hand, though, which is magic items, specifically stuff that we've created for tonight.
Yeah.
Now, we give these to you freely.
Oh, yeah. Use them if you like them.
If you like them, great. These all have a bit of a history behind them, not only gaming history, but we've added some history. Now, what we did do is not necessarily try to focus on the mechanics of this, and that's more for like a storyline thing. So if you wanted to adapt this to whatever you happen to be playing, whether it's 5th edition, 3.5, Shadowrun, if you wanted to, like
sure.
You could probably take some of this stuff, although this is a lot of the stuff's more medieval based, but feel froggy, do it. So I believe you have actually the first thing. Oh, before we get to that,
yes,
we've got a couple of different types. So we've given you a couple pieces of armor.
Or things that would fall into the armor.
Armor-like. Yeah, armor-like.
Armor-ish. Yours is definitely armor.
Yes. And yours could potentially be armor. Or at least it's a pair of boots.
It is.
We've got a weapon.
Yes, indeed.
Technically two weapons.
Yep.
A useful tool.
Something to keep in your toolbox.
Yes.
For me.
Some less useful tools.
And some just oddities.
Yes. What we like to call wondrous items. And they are wondrous.
Yes. And fun.
Yes. So let's go ahead and start it off. Let's go ahead and talk about your first magic item that you've created. Tell me what it is. Give me a little history behind it.
I've got the boots of free running.
Okay. And every time you say that, I can't not think the movie Cool Runnings, and I don't know why.
Oh, no.
But that would be an awesome magic item, also, is a boost of Cool Runnings, where you just can sluice everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Is that a proper term, sluicing?
No.
Okay. Well, it is now. I've invented it.
The sluice is the noun.
Okay.
To sled on a sluice is what you do.
I see... Sledding with great style is called
a sluice.
Oh, yes, luging. I'm just going to verb everything now. Let's continue. The boots of free running.
So, I knew a monk who used to enjoy doing runny, jumpy, flippy monk shit and would shout parkour anytime they were going to do some Jackie Chan, John Woo monk shit.
That sounds like most monks that I've played with.
Sure. But they would scream parkour. And so I'm like, parkour is free running. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And what you need there is you need a pair of boots that really ups your free running opportunities.
So you can't just get a bunch of Air Jordans, man. You got to like.
Yeah, you need some boots of free running.
Okay. So tell me, what do these things look like?
All right. They are smooth bottomed, smooth sided, low top shoes. Solid black leather. There's not a mark on them anyway. Anywhere. They're slide-ons. They're solid black.
Sounds fucking fancy.
Oh, yeah.
Love them. All right.
So you wake up in the morning. They've got 5 charges. For 1 charge, you get to add 10 foot of distance to your speed, your base speed, for 1 minute. For a 2nd charge, you get to ignore rough terrain. And for a 3rd charge, it gives you spider climb on top of it. Because you've seen the cats run across walls and do...
Yeah, but you can run across the ceiling with these things.
Exactly.
So kind of boots of spider climb plus...
Plus boots of speed.
Equal the boots of free running.
Yep.
Nice. So have you come up with any lore behind them?
I believe it was made by Mogdal the Mobile, the turtle... Diviner that
is he a fast turtle?
He is super fast.
That is awesome. So a fast turtle diviner?
Yes.
Wonderful. Love it.
He always sees it coming and you never see him coming. All right. What about you, though? You've got some for real armor, some armor coming up.
So this is called the Armor of the King Crab. And I'll give you a description and then we'll get into the powers. This is a +1 full plate. It's deep red in color and smells faintly of the ocean. Legends suggest the first Armor of the King Crab was created during the brief period of peace between the Salhagans and the island nation of Olivair, as a way for each species' ambassadors to safely meet in their respective environments. Because, and as you'll see in a few seconds, it's because they can either breathe air or breathe water.
Sure.
Salhagan breathe water, humans breathe air, right?
Turns out.
Yeah. So, what are we looking at? We're looking at basically armor that looks like a crab. Like, literally, it looks like crab armor, like crustacean armor. Bright red, delightful. When donned, the Armor of the King Crab grants resistance to all physical damage and the ability to breathe either air or water, depending upon what environment you're in.
Sure.
Again, very useful, right?
Yeah.
Resisting all physical damage is good when you're in the middle of crushing waves or crashing surf or rocks being thrown at you. Additionally, as a bonus action, you may command either the right or the left gauntlet to suddenly expand into a large, meaty claw, which mimics a shield, but of course one that you can't be disarmed with.
Unless you're literally disarmed,
yes. The large claw shield can't hold anything, but it can be turned in back into a regular gauntlet with the standard action. So as a bonus action, you just kind of pop it out as a claw. You could block yourself. And we can talk about whether it's a tower shield or a standard shield or
sure
buckler. It doesn't really matter. Like, you guys can figure that out. I'll let the DMs expand on that. What would it look like if it was a gigantic tower shield that's attached to your hand?
Right. So I need to know, is this armor spiked?
It could be.
I feel like it ought to be spiked.
I think it should probably be spiked. I think that you should take some damage when attacked with the armor that gained crab. Now, there is a drawback, as all of my magic items have.
Sure.
The drawback is, the Armor of the King Crab prohibits the wearer from taking any movement unless they walk or run sideways. So you have to crab run.
Sure. It doesn't actually prevent them from doing that or even slowing them down, but they are, in fact, walking or running sideways.
You're running or walking sideways like a crab, so you can't just straight up walk normally, which I think is ridiculous and hilarious.
Right. Which is why you made it.
Of course. Now, we've got a couple of weapons, and I want to talk to you about your staff weapon, because I think that's the next thing we should get to.
Okay. So, what we've got a staff, right? Staff is a solid, silvery material. Not silver, silvery material.
Mm-hmm. So, powdery silver, or translucent silver, or just like metal silver?
Just kind of a duller silver.
So, like aluminum.
Very much like aluminum.
Okay.
The base of the staff, rather than having a walking spike or a metal cap, it has a black rubbery substance on the base of the staff.
Okay.
The staff begins each day with 3 charges. That's it. It's completely nondescript other than that.
Okay.
A just a luminous staff with a black rubberized foot for all intents and purposes.
Sounds good.
You start the day. Got a couple charges going. In this case, 3, 5, 7, whatever is appropriate to your campaign. You can blow a charge to use your arcana skill instead of an athletics or acrobatics skill for movement. Not for contested stuff like grapple or anything like that, but for making jumps. Or for flips or anything like that, you use the staff of pogo.
Put it between your legs and the pogos.
Yep.
So you made a pogo stick.
I did, in fact. Yes.
I love it.
Yep. And you have to. It uses your intellect instead of your physicality.
Now,
don't know how to use a pogo stick and you attempt to, you fail.
Now, I want you to pair this with your boots of parkour.
Yes, exactly.
Boots of free running.
Yes.
So that you run up on the monster and then you pogo stick off his face.
Yeah, I'm made by the same creator.
I would even say it renews its charges if you do something outrageous.
Oh yeah, if you stick something ludicrous with it, yeah.
If you jump off a cliff, Tony Hawk it, you know, you've got your board on, or not the board, but your pogo stick on one side, you're just kind of like, then it should definitely save you from dying.
From dying.
I'm not saying you're not going to take discomfort. Not gonna say you're not gonna take damage, but you should definitely save yourself from dying because that is badass. I like that.
You're gonna break both your legs. You're gonna be down to 1d4 hit points. Down to 1d4 hit points, and but you're alive.
Now, I would also say, as a staff, it probably should deliver some damage.
Sure. Yeah. It's a magic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And strike. It's not a +1 weapon because pogo sticks are not very wieldy, right? But it's magic.
I want a barbarian now to wield a pogo stick.
Sure.
I think that would be hilarious. We need a dragoon class. You imagine
stick into the sky and old school, come down with a spear?
Old school Final Fantasy dragoon.
I know what type of dragoon you were talking about.
You jump up on that pogo stick and you come down with a spear. That would be awesome.
Slam down with a mighty fury.
Mighty. The mightiest fury. I love everything about that.
All right, so you've got a weapon lined up also.
I do, in fact, have a weapon lined up, and it is the mightiest weapon, my friend. Some may disagree with me, but there's a lot of history with this one, and you actually know the character it came from, so.
It's true. It's the god of soup.
Yes, so I have, in one of my campaigns, I had a dwarven god of soup named Brak.
Right.
And this is his bronze ladle, his magical club. So let me describe what this thing is. So it is, first, it's basically a gigantic soup ladle, guys. That's the best description for it.
I mean, that's what it is.
It is literally a gigantic soup ladle. It may be fit for a dwarf, but it's built for anybody. This enormous bronze soup ladle, which almost kind of has like a golden sheen if you look at it in the right light, but it's definitely bronze, could double as a club. And in fact did for the original creator of this weapon. A dwarven chef from the distant past, Brak the Gourmet was known for his love of two things, combat and cooking. During the Battle of Arag's Belly, he could be seen feeding the front lines from a massive iron pot strapped to his back and simultaneously braining enemy hobgoblins with the soup ladle. Eventually, Brak fell in battle after unsuccessfully trying to chew his way out of a black dragon, which, by the way, he purposely got himself swallowed because he was foraging for mushrooms for his soup. Seeing his bravery and love of cooking, the god Moradin elevated him to the status of a demigod, so he became the god of soup. His adherents have since learned how to make his favorite weapon, along with their disregard of cooking safety. It's a typical club, so it's a +1 club.
Sure.
It's a big bronze handle, but it also gives you a little bit of ability. First off, you can bless once per day because you would think his clerics would most likely be cooking clerics of some sort.
Sure.
3 times a day, you can touch any 5-gallon or smaller container and a random soup appears, which is filling, nourishing, and slightly worrisome.
Right. I can see that.
Like there's unidentified bits in it.
Yeah. I mean, where does this soup come from? And Brak was known to eat, to not just eat, but to make nearly anything edible, which would be nerve-wracking to people of a less than stellar constitution.
That is also true. And for the record, the god Brak, when he was living, was a one-eyed, sweaty dwarf.
Who attempted to chew his way out of a black dragon.
He was also a mean son of a bitch. He was a mean bastard.
All right.
So that's my weapon, the ladle of a god of soup.
I feel like once per month.
Hero's Feast?
It should do Hero's Feast, but it should be strictly a soup buffet with garlic bread.
Once per year, maybe a magnificent mansion of some sort, but it turns into a Ruby Tuesdays.
Sure. No. Their soup is garbage.
I know. That's why I was...
No, that's awful.
Don't do that. How ridiculous. How ridiculous is that? All right. We got a couple of extra magic items, but we're going to take a real quick short break.
Real quick and short.
We're going to take a short break.
After these messages...
after a word from our sponsors.
This episode is sponsored by
Initializing Waffles Maple Syrup Promotion. Please enjoy.
Welcome to Waffle Maple Syrup's brand new Starfinder podcast, Journeys Adrift. Grab your space popcorn and join us for the wild journeys of these five characters. Starting us off is the prospective Madaloon herself, Zehavum T. Don't tell anyone, but she's on a journey for some classified Starfinder intel.
What? Who told you that? I'm absolutely doing no such thing.
Don't worry, this is all behind the fourth wall. It doesn't count. Next up is Dr. Lin on a journey to clear his name.
And for the last time, there are four tentacles in regular pants, of which there are simply four pant holes. That is correct. Hello?
That's not awkward. Let's see. Next on the roster, we have Tetsu, who is on a wholesome journey to happiness. Best of luck with that, buddy.
What do you mean, best of luck? That sounded sarcastic. Was that sarcastic?
Don't worry about it. Let's move along to our little friend here, Mote. Mote is on a research journey for Drift Technology. Who knows what secrets they'll find out there?
Right. You can't see me. Believe me, my visor is displaying a smile. Like, I can't.
Sorry, bud. This is an audio-only format. Anyways, last but not least is the lightning rock himself, Aizen. He is on a journey
for a cure. Let me cut you off right there. I've got to find a cure for the circumstances happening to my body, or else I'm going to end up in pieces in the process.
Oh, well, that sounds fun. But between you and me, listeners, there's a lot more journeys than these five happening behind the scenes. So join us and listen to Journeys Adrift on the Waffles Maple Syrup podcast and live stream to find out where these journeys lead.
This is a commercial break. If you guys would like to hear us review something like a product or service, or if you'd like us to cover something like a topic,
or if you'd like to sponsor an episode, we'd love to hear from you and have you contact us at info@goblinscorner.com.
So write to us and maybe we'll talk to you. Maybe not. And we're back.
Welcome back.
All right. We're talking magic items, custom magic items from the Goblin's Corner Armory itself. And Matt, you've got an interesting one. Tell us about this.
Okay. This is a love note to one of the greatest magic items ever. And it didn't make its way into 5th edition.
Tell us what it is.
It's the Robe of Useful Items.
Okay. The Robe of Useful. Tell me a little bit about the Robe of Useful Items so that it's very possible our listeners don't know what that is.
Okay.
Maybe they've only played 5th edition.
In editions gone by, the Robe of Useful Items
was awesome.
It was a robe that had multiple patches on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could pull a patch off and make a 20-foot ladder. It could have 5d4 gold pieces in it. It could make a donkey, right? It's always something useful, hence the name, that oftentimes it's not convenient to carry with you, but it's always convenient to have with you.
There is also, before we get to your magic item,
the Robe of Useless Items,
which I would give to players as a challenge to make useful.
There is very few things in the game that are successfully useless.
The most useless, some would say, item was the sovereign glue?
It was a bottle of sovereign glue that had been glued shut and was indestructible. And people are like, oh, I can't get to the sovereign glue.
It was a bottle
that was indestructible. In any item that's indestructible
is wonderful.
It's automatically useful.
It now becomes attached to anything else I want to kill.
Oh, so much more than that. So what do you make the tip of your ram out of?
The indestructible bottle. What do you make the ram for your boat out of?
An indestructible bottle.
What do you make the head of your club?
An indestructible bottle.
Yep.
It's all about pounds per square inch. It's a 1-ounce bottle, which makes it tiny. And if you know that it cannot be broken, then you put all of the force behind the bottle. It's just science. Magical science.
Magical science.
Magical right. science goodness.
So the robe of useful items is your, this is your homage to that.
Right. And this is called a rough patch.
Okay. And I like the pun already.
Right. So you're out in the middle of nowhere, come across a dragon, murder it. Now, all by yourself, you're a dragon murdering badass. How do you get the loot home? Oh, no. You can't carry that much loot, and it might be gone by the time you get back. Life is terrible. So you pull off your rough patch, which is a cart.
Mm-hmm.
Boop. You load up the cart. And then you pull off your donkey, and you hitch it up. And you ride back to town with your cart and your donkey and all of your loot.
So these are basically scroll-like patches.
Right. Now, if you wanted to do them uncommon so that you could put them back into a patch, I would be okay with that. But just as a common item, it's a one-use item. You pull out any normal item from the player's handbook.
And if you did like uncommon or rare, then maybe they would act more like figurines of wondrous power. So
right.
they might last for a couple hours and then you have to turn them back to a patch.
Sure.
I'm down with that. I like that. Because then you can wear your items, which you could do with figurines too.
Sure, but it is almost always inconvenient to carry a 20-foot ladder.
That is always true.
But you almost always have your clothes on you.
Generally, yes.
Almost. And so I tickled myself for a second there. but yeah, so, you know, you just, I think they're super useful. They're super simple. And one of the things it also lets you do is, let's say you've got a person in town that makes magic items, but maybe he's not that high level. Maybe you don't want to provide your players with a magic shop, but you want to give them the opportunity to pick up some knickknacks and some things that are useful, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just say there are six of these things in the shop, and let them pick which ones they want. They're clearly not overpowered. They're literally in the player's handbook.
Yeah,
not even in the DMG.
Got an arcane seamstress?
Yeah.
There you go. Go into the arcane clothing shop. You're going to get your shift weave garments anyway. Pick up a rough patch or two.
Yeah.
Call it a day. I think, and this would be kind of interesting treasure too. Like, imagine finding some of these patches off of monsters. Like, you know, you roll a bunch of orcs and you find their biker jackets and you have a bunch of rough patches on their biker jackets.
You roll that dragon, right?
Why do orcs have biker jackets? Why not?
Sure. For reasons.
For reasons.
So you go and roll that dragon, right? And mm-hmm. maybe you find this loot on a dead adventurer because he knew the dragon was there, or she knew the dragon was there. They got murdered by the dragon. Their plan was to pop the patches, drag all the loot back, only they failed in the important part of the mission, dispatching the dragon.
I love it.
So, yeah.
What a wonderful magic item.
I like it. I think it's fun. It's useful. It's not overpowered, but it gets rid of some of the bookkeeping mm-hmm. that a lot of people don't necessarily enjoy playing with.
And it's something that is, as you mentioned, it's easy to dole out as loot.
Yeah.
I guess it'd be common or uncommon one as well. And I'll get to the very rare one.
Oh, okay.
And this is something that we've mentioned on previous
episodes.
I was looking at my notes.
I was looking at him like he was crazy. Yeah, I'm skipping around. Okay.
I'm skipping like a hummingbird. I'm bouncing all over the place. This one we've actually talked about, the levitation balloons.
Yeah.
And I went ahead and decided to write this one up because this is always a good example of very simple magic items that in this case is single use, but it could be multiple use if you played it right.
Sure.
But these are just single use magic items, and essentially you blow them up and you levitate. The description is, the small flat pieces of rubber blow up into bright multicolored balloons and normally come in a pack of 20. The only indication of their magical nature is the robust string attached to each balloon, which is far thicker than most balloon strings. So the only way that you would know this is a magical item, aside from casting detect magic, of course,
sure.
is got a big thick-ass string that you can grip really nicely,
right.
coil around your hand. The powers, upon blowing up the balloon, and this is just my devious humor, it takes a round for small creatures, it takes two rounds for medium creatures, 3 rounds for large creatures. So the bigger the person is, the longer it takes to blow up.
Now, I will note that you don't actually put a cap to this.
I do not.
So,
yes.
The terrorist could just huff and puff and,
he,
and
I would 6 be,
8 rounds later, whatever, just...
There is definitely some checks to this magical ability. But yes, upon blowing up the balloon, according to your size, the balloons act as the levitation spell without concentration. The user may levitate for as long as they are holding the string. As long as they are holding the string,
right.
Physically holding the string. Once the string is let go, the air surges out and the balloon ceases to be magical. Now you're thinking, wow, this thing is fucking great. Except for the following. The balloon does have resistance to bludgeoning damage because it's a balloon.
Right.
But if it takes 1 point of damage from any other form, it pops and leaves the user to their fate, however high in the sky they happen to be at the time.
I think I would make allowances for a couple of things. It doesn't take psychic damage. It doesn't take poison damage.
It's an object, so
right.
It would follow the same things that typical...
Object rules.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even let it take cold damage, to be honest. Now, if it was something that sprayed shards of ice, yes, but if it was just...
Because that would be piercing.
Right. But if it was just cold damage, no.
I would say it reduces the movement. But I could... I don't... Yeah, DMs, you're welcome to mess around with that a little bit. Now, the question that I have, and I'm surprised Matt hasn't asked it yet, having a talent in balloons is, do you want to ask the question?
So, what happens if, say, like myself, you can make balloon animals out of them?
That is the question now, isn't it? I would almost argue that you get an extra movement speed out of it, or instead of the levitation, maybe a fly?
Sure.
But you have to have the skill, and you have to make the check.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, maybe that's what it is. For you to get a higher levitate speed, right? It's a relatively low check. Because that's only up and down. Right? So, let's say it's 10. But if you want to get a fly speed, then you have to beat a 15... And you get a fly speed of, what do you think, like?
20.
20? Okay, I'm good with that. I was going to say 5 feet. You get a fly speed of 5 feet for every point above 15 you get.
Oh, that's very generous.
Not early on, it's not.
Well, no, but I mean, but you might have some crazy-ass bard that's like maxed out his balloon animal skill.
It could happen.
Would that be perform crafting? What would that be in fifth?
Because
there's actually a crafting skill in third.
Right. It would either be perform or make up your check for it. That's what you do. You make up your check for it.
Now we've got one final magic item for tonight for you guys to mess with. And this one, I originally wrote it as a rare item or very rare, but I'm almost going more artifact at this point with this. And what I believe is that it should be an artifact, a minor artifact, because there are some dastardly things that go along with this magic item as well.
It's true.
And what I am speaking of course, is the bicycle built for 12.
Yes.
And you may wonder, wait a minute, a 12-seated bicycle? Absolutely, yes, that's exactly what it is. In fact,
think of a tandem bike. And add a bunch more seats.
A lot more seats. Let's describe this thing. This sturdy bike comes in either red or blue because, you know, you should get a little bit of, you know, determination between those two things. Supporting 3 large wheels. So it's got one in the center.
Mm-hmm.
It's got 12 seats along with pedals because everybody should pedal.
Right.
At the front is a large black rubber horn as well as a gear shift, which goes from drive to neutral. That's it. Just drive and neutral. 2 gears.
Right.
Some stories suggest the Archmage Adrian the Unremarkable created the original prototype of the bicycle built for 12, but no written history exists to confirm it, because he's
unremarkable.
Yep. So you might be asking yourself, I crack myself up. So what you might be asking yourself, what does this thing do? Well, obviously it goes to the plains, guys.
Clearly.
What else does a bicycle built for 12 do? Go to the outer plains. Should 12 individuals, 12.
It takes 12.
It takes 12 to get on the bike and begin pedaling. The lead biker may shift into drive, honk the rubber horn in the front, and plane shift to whatever destination they have in mind as per the spell. So you got 12 people pedaling. He shifts it into drive. He honks the horn. Bam. You're in Gehenna or right. Sigil or the, you know, Concord and Opposition planes or right. wherever you happen to want to be.
Sure.
However, and this is the caveat, there is a 7% chance for every person under the total of 12, because our typical party is 5.
Yeah.
Usually 4 or 5. So there's a 7% chance for every person under the total of 12 for the bicycle to transport the travelers to a random plane.
So is that a 7% chance or a 7% cumulative chance?
Cumulative chance.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to clarify for the people.
Every person under 12, you add 7% to a mishap.
Sure.
So you can easily see
how this could go horribly awry. Horribly. Quickly.
But if you need to get the fuck out of Dodge, you can jump on it yourself.
Yeah. I mean, you're virtually...
You're going to go somewhere.
You're guaranteeing that you're not going to... Oh, that's brilliant, though. But what you do is you intentionally attempt to drive to the abyss.
You still might randomly go there.
You might.
I mean, if you're jumping on a bicycle built for 12 by yourself with the whole intention of getting out of Dodge,
wherever you go is better than where you are.
Yep, you better be prepared for where you go. Alternatively, now there is an option to this bicycle built for 12. Alternatively, any number of peddlers, 1 or 12, may transport themselves to the astral plane if the bike is put in neutral. So if you could just put yourself in the astral plane. So that's sure. that's kind of a way out of that. There's no chance of a mishap whatsoever.
However.
So Githyanki intensely hate the bicycle built for 12 and will attack the bicycle built for 12 on site, as the astral plane has no biking lanes. And they would honestly oppose it even if there were biking lanes. And finally, if you want to actually ride this thing on the ground, it's got a movement rate of 40, so it doesn't go really fast.
Right.
Because it's really long.
Sure.
I mean, it's a long-ass bike. I mean, it's like 10 feet? 12 to 15 feet? It's a long... How long is a 12-person bike?
Like 20 foot?
Yeah.
Closer to 20.
It's a long-ass bike.
Yes.
Very cumbersome. That's another problem. Still, I would still consider this an artifact thing, because if you have 12 people in your party, or you find
you can unerringly
a bunch of randos,
travel the planes.
You can unerringly travel the planes.
And that is
artifact level.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thus the mishap problem.
Yeah.
So there you have it. A couple of magic items directly from our weird and twisted brains for you to use at any point in time in your campaigns.
You know, there's a whole bunch of these that... I absolutely could not use when we discuss these.
Yes.
And
we've got a lot more magic items that we will be giving out at some point in the near future for
all sorts of things.
All sorts of things. Wonderful things.
Shush, do not give away secrets.
We won't give away. Okay, we won't give our trade secrets away. Jesus. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. If you have, give us a review. Give us a like. Oh, and of course, you can always write to us. I'm Eric at GoblinsCorner.com.
And I'm Matt at GoblinsCorner.com.
And if you want to hit us up with general stuff, info@GoblinsCorner.com. We've got a Twitter page, guys.
We've got a Discord.
We've got a Facebook.
We've got all of the things. And Instagram. You post there sometimes.
I do have Instagram that posts as well.
When you have time, when you're not redecorating the place. By the way, the place is looking much better.
And we are redecorating the studio here, and I'm doing a Twitch channel occasionally for Build Along, so feel free to join us for that as well.
And sooner or later, I will also be jumping in on that and making drinks or possibly grub every
now and then. For a drink along. Yeah. Please join us for that as well.
All right, folks. Have a good night.
That's all the time we got. Once again, my name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
The Goblin's Corner has been written and produced by Eric Holden
and Matt Staples.
D20 did our music.
And this is, in fact, a Subterranean production.
The voice is so low.